Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Good morning, my people, and welcome to my anniversary episode. I'm Hillary Hendershot, your host, and it's true. Profit Boss Radio launched its first episode 1 year ago on February 2nd, 2016. Technically, we are off by 5 days because this episode airs on February 7th, 2017. But hey, it's the closest I could get, and it's been an incredible year. I have to tell you, I think the podcast has been as good or better for me as it has been for you. I was super scared to launch it. I mean, I didn't want it to fail. I didn't want to put a bunch of resources in it and not have it pay off. I didn't want to be bad. And I really just didn't want to be like one of the masses. There are a lot of podcasts out there for you to choose from. So let me just say from my heart, if you choose mine, I'm honored. I put a lot of work into the show so that you will get a lot out of it. I sort of incubated the idea for launching Profit Boss Radio like a year before I actually took action. And I really didn't want to do the technical parts. So I hired a production team and sunk money into that. And so I was sort of all in, right? And I knew that there were no guarantees. But I heard some experts speak on the topic of podcasting. And they basically said, if you have a business and you have a message and your message can be for people everywhere geographically, then you're probably set up right to host a podcast. So I did it and I love it. It's like one of the most fun things that I do. I was a little afraid at first to do solo episodes. I guess I needed to step into some confidence about thinking you'd be interested in what I have to say. So I leaned on guest interviews in the beginning. But after the Money and Love series at the beginning, where the feedback I got in the Profit Boss Facebook group was basically, yo, Hillary, you are a certified financial planner. I don't listen to you for relationship advice. Actually, I think a couple people specifically said that to me. You know, they said, I don't get to talk to a certified financial planner very often, and I want to know what to do with my money, not my romance. So I got it, and I took the feedback. So since then, I've done 9 solo episodes where I just pick a topic and I talk. And sometimes I can't believe how much I've got to say, but you also have to have some compassion for me. Before I had the podcast, all of this commentary was just running around in my brain. I had no outlet. I had nowhere to channel it. So sometimes grabbing the microphone is pretty therapeutic for me. Sometimes someone will come into my office or call me with a financial question, and I'll do an episode in response to that, such as episode 19, which is about how to calculate your returns on investment real estate. Sometimes I do an episode in response to something that happens in world news, such as episode 25, which is a step-by-step guide to bulletproof your finances after geopolitical surprises. And that episode was originally about the Brexit, but it's evergreen. Everything I said in that episode is valid for any geopolitical event that has implications for the economy and the stock market. Sometimes I'll do an episode on a topic that used to stump me, so I know it probably stumps you. And that's what today's episode is, although it's not a solo episode. I do have a guest today, a very special guest, special to me. But let me tell you where the idea came from. See, lots of podcasters do roundups for their anniversary show, like a best of show where I'd play clips from my best or most popular guests or shows. And I thought about that. I did. But I also know from watching the download statistics that many of you who subscribe go back and listen to all of the episodes when you do. So something about a best of Profit Boss Radio show just didn't do it for me. But the idea of anniversaries reminds me of love, because the anniversary we're most likely to celebrate is our romantic ones, right? Our first date, first kiss, our wedding anniversary. I mean, LinkedIn, for some reason, thinks we celebrate work anniversaries. And I recently got about 100 emails from people on LinkedIn congratulating me on my work anniversary. I have no clue what anniversary that might be, because LinkedIn as an application is very difficult for me to use. I don't understand the app. I don't understand why when I get an email from LinkedIn on my phone, I can't click through to the app. It's very frustrating. So I literally have no idea what LinkedIn thinks I was having an anniversary for, but I guess I'll go check it out. well. It was wonderful to hear from all those people. But I still think the anniversary we're most likely to celebrate is our love anniversary. And I've been meaning to interview my husband on this show for a long time. See, he's a hedge fund manager, and I used to get stumped by the conversation about hedge funds. It's like anything, right? You can learn in a book, but you still don't really understand them in the real world until you have experience with them. So if you're like I was, you have zero clue what a hedge fund is or does, or what you should think about it. But you've heard that hedge fund managers all earn disgusting amounts of money and profit when others suffer and hang out on big white yachts with teeny little bikinis and champagne and caviar. So you kind of resent hedge fund managers. Well, today's episode is going to debunk the myths and demystify the hedge because I have for you a real life hedge fund manager in the flesh, my husband, Robert Hendershot. In this episode, we talk about whether all hedge fund managers are actually swimming in money. A little hint, not all, but definitely some. And for a few, they're more like drowning in it. We talk about the fact that the term hedge fund actually means very little without a bunch of additional detail. And we talk about who can invest in hedge funds and what their expected returns are. And I just want to clarify one thing in the intro here because I said it in the interview, but I was off by a couple of degrees. So I just want to get it right. So in order to invest in a hedge fund, you do need to be an accredited investor. And the definition of that is that you either have $1 million of investable net worth, excluding the value of your home, or if you're a single person, you've had at least $200,000 of personal income for the last 2 years. Or if you're married, you've had at least $300,000 of personal income for the last 2 years. So it's income or assets. I've heard some people, especially in Silicon Valley, tell me that they're now an accredited investor, like it's a badge of honor. But it's not really. I mean, sure, it's great to get to those financial levels, but it's basically just when the government says, hey, you have enough money now that we are not going to worry about you and your dumb choices and any mistakes you make. We're no longer protecting you from yourself. You are on your own. It's kind of like when you turn 18 in the USA. It's like, yeah, you're on your own. And yeah, you're on your own. So hedge funds are for accredited investors. Truth be told, most organizations that invest in hedge funds are pension funds, like the one that pays the firefighters and police officers in your town when they retire. Also, endowment funds, which are the pools of money that former students contribute to when they write a check to their alma mater. And then really wealthy people, sometimes referred to as the ultra wealthy or affluent with more than $10 million of net worth. As always, I've tried to keep it to what you want to know and what you need to know. As a special addition to today's episode, I thought I'd read some of the amazing iTunes reviews I've been getting. Thank you very much. But then this morning, this email came in from someone I spoke to in October. You might remember that was Women's Financial Freedom Month, and I offered strategy sessions to listeners. I spoke to this woman, and she wrote in to let me know what's been happening since we talked, and it blew me away. I kind of got choked up, actually. So I'm sharing parts of this letter instead. Dear Hillary, I want to express my sincere gratitude to you. We had a conversation in 2016 when you were doing Financial Freedom Month calls. That conversation opened floodgates. First of all, it led to a very raw and open conversation between me and my dear husband and many tears. From then on, it has led to many valuable and productive money conversations. We both read Overcoming Under-Earning by Barbara Stanny. We both read your handouts. We filled them out and we talked about them. We discovered our values. We started aligning our goals, our spending, and our saving with our values. And incredibly, in the months that followed, we both started charging more for any engagement or business opportunity. Business began coming for both of us from unexpected places and people agreeing to the higher rates, not necessarily at the outset, but we stayed firm and things really progressed once the universe understood that we both know our worth. Now, not only do we have a growing IRA account to which we contribute every month, we also have an account specifically designated to be spent in 2 years to take a family trip that is aligned with our values instead of fancy parties. Plus, we've made our kids aware of the existence of that investment account, and they're part of it. In fact, some of our kids forwent extracurricular activities to contribute to the trip. Proud mama. Hashtag proud mama. We have our emergency fund almost fully funded, and we're almost out of lingering debt. All in all, I feel so much more in control of my money and my life, and I'm so pleased for all the smaller steps in the right direction. Plus, it's done wonders for us as a couple to start looking at our money with more intention, with more care, more forgiveness, and respect. The road is still long, and I have plenty of goals set out for myself, but these are some smaller milestones that I'm celebrating, and I wanted to share with you as that short conversation with you in many ways initiated it all. Thank you. Thank you so much for being someone who listens to this show, for being someone who would get on the phone with me and trust what I had to say, and most of all, for being someone who has the courage to take new action, and for being someone who's willing to take the bull by the horns. I hope that you enjoy today's episode of Profit Boss Radio, and especially getting to hear me and my husband chat, and I left some of the bloopers in there just for you, and I hope you enjoy those as well.
Hello, husband.
Hey, wife.
Welcome to my anniversary episode.
I am so happy to be here for your anniversary episode.
What has 1 year of Profit Boss Radio been like for you?
It has been like watching a flower bloom from the little bud that you started at a year ago. Yeah, just a little tiny bud.
Wow.
I can barely see it.
Like a 40-year-old little bud.
No, like a little bud. And then blooming into the beautiful flower Profit Boss is today.
It's complimentary yet patronizing. Thank you.
I'm glad I could help.
That's nice. So we're here today to talk about you, but really hedge funds, because I think hedge funds are this big mystery. But we have to start by talking about you, because it has to make sense to people why I brought you on to talk about hedge funds.
All right.
So tell us about you.
Well, I have a PhD in finance, and I've used that both to be
How come you say finance and most people say finance?
Because I'm much more refined than most people.
Oh, is that right?
Because we in finance think we're a bigger deal than those of us who look at us in finance.
Okay, that's the scientific answer. I got it. So you have a PhD in finance.
In this thing that has to do with money and investing. And I have done work in alternative investments for almost 20 years and hedge funds.
What are alternative investments? Alternative to what?
Alternative to stocks and bonds. So,
okay, so not stocks and bonds, not mutual funds, not index funds, which are what I always talk about. Now, your first career was a professor of finance.
That's right.
Right?
Professor of finance.
What do you teach?
I teach finance. That's, you don't want to go down that road. It's complicated.
No, it's not complicated. What's the names of the classes you teach?
I teach entrepreneurial finance and venture capital and private equity.
Okay. So you teach finance. And how long are you teaching finance at the university when you... Did you start as a hedge fund manager?
Nope. I started as a boring old professor who did some research on banking and what's happened to the U.S. banking industry over the last 30 years. And it turned out that there were some ideas that came out of that on how to invest in banks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you had this sort of niche level of expertise, and you decided to turn that into a hedge fund. You didn't actually go into it thinking, we're going to start a hedge fund.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And so you started in the banking hedge fund world?
So I became an expert on banks, in particular bank consolidation. And then had some ideas.
What is consolidation?
That's where two banks merge and become one bank. Your listeners probably have noticed that there are all sorts of tiny little banks around. There are banks everywhere. No one ever uses their branches. And most of them need to disappear. And that's what bank consolidation is.
So the big banks eat up the little banks.
That's right. And that's how the big banks got to be big.
Okay. So how do you start being a hedge fund manager?
Well, there are lots of different ways that you can start, but you have to find someone who will give you money and give you a chance to show that your ideas for how to make money investing in whatever it is you invest in my case, banks, that they are valid, sustainable, and profitable.
So someone took a chance on you.
That's right.
And that was a billionaire, right?
That's correct.
And you've worked for several billionaires.
So for about a decade, we worked for me and my team worked for a billionaire in his hedge fund. And then over the second decade, we've worked with a group that was founded by another billionaire. So yeah, it really helps to have
friends that are billionaires.
Yeah, billionaires in your corner.
Right. I mean, how did you meet billionaires?
Well, I had the good fortune of doing some of that original research with a colleague who became one of my best friends, who became the best man at our wedding.
Oh, who, yeah, I know him.
Happens to know billionaires. So basically, I got introduced to him.
Basically, because he is fairly well known in the public policy arena. So there are billionaires, right, who agree with him in terms of public policy that he gets to know on a personal and professional level.
That's right.
And he said, hey, I'm also doing this thing.
That's right.
Right. Okay. So it pays to know people. And let's see. So what is hedge? What does that actually mean?
Well, hedge is, in a strict sense, to reduce risk. Sometimes people use the analogy of the hedge that goes around your yard, because that delineates exactly where your yard ends and the next yard would begin. And that's what a hedge fund is about, is sticking to a specific investment strategy and taking specific risks that are very well contained. Now, a lot of hedge funds don't follow that, so that's not a good definition. Really, what a hedge fund is, any investment fund that is limited to very high net worth or large institutions, so a select investor group, lightly regulated, and can do more complicated investment strategies than most investment funds will do.
Yeah, I've heard some podcasters, one specifically, say that hedge funds were unregulated, but that's patently false, right?
I wish that were true, and it is patently false.
Right, because we have been dealing with SEC regulation.
And so they are
from your side for a long time.
There are more things that a hedge fund is allowed to do, but hedge funds still have to follow lots of rules.
Okay. So we started by talking about you and banks. And so people are starting with this picture of the banking world, but really hedge funds sort of span all kinds of industries and opportunities and places and people. And so can you just talk for a little bit about what are some of the different kinds of hedge funds you've come across so that people can get a sense of the expansiveness.
The landscape is pretty well defined. So we are what would be called a sector specialist fund, because we just do one particular sector. There are lots of sector specialists that do technology and media. There are others that do just healthcare. And then there are generalists who invest in all sorts of type of different industries. And then there are funds that invest outside of the stock market, and they invest in credit securities. They could be bonds, but more often they're derivatives. So a derivative would be an option or a credit default swap or anything that...
It's an investment based on an investment.
That's right.
It's like for any first tier market for bonds or stocks, there's these second tier markets. So people who are betting on the bets.
That's right. So you buy a stock in a company because you think the company will do well. And if the company does well, you do well. A derivative, you're making a bet on the stock. So it's a link to the company, but it starts to take on characteristics that are separate from the company, distinct from the company.
Right. And so about how many years have hedge funds been around?
The hedge fund industry got big when the last type of hedge fund, which is sometimes called global macro, which means you can do whatever the heck you want. Hedge funds started to make very large bets. And so most people, if they were paying attention, first heard of hedge funds when they bet against the pound in the 70s on whether the pound could maintain the fixed exchange rates that had been put in place. So they basically bet billions of dollars against the Bank of England, and they won. And they made billions of dollars, and that created a awareness of the possibility of making these more complicated investments that could pay off very, very big. I know that you've seen the movie The Big Short. The Big Short was a pretty accurate depiction of people who made complicated bets against the U.S. housing market and made billions of dollars because they turned out to be right.
Right, except The Big Short specifically, I'm a little disappointed you brought that movie up, because The Big Short specifically said that that one guy accurately predicted things. Like, it positioned him as if he was smart, genius almost. But that's not actually the case, because he hasn't done a damn thing worth anything since.
Yeah, it's generally the case that people who make, if you consider someone just going to Vegas, Now, if you know the rules of the game, if you know the rules of blackjack, you know the rules of craps, then you can win, maybe even win twice, maybe even win three times. But there is no one who wins every single time. And The Big Short did position it like it was a sure thing, like everyone should have known, and he was the only one who had the insight and the balls to go after it.
That's not true. He had balls and luck.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because there were people who went into it earlier and lost everything, people who went into it later looking for a rebound and lost everything. Luck is a big part of it.
Okay. So when I got started in the investing world, hedge funds seemed to me like this elusive thing. The guy who was my mentor, you know, was my father. And he would always say, hedge funds are a black box. Hedge funds are a black box. Why he was saying that was he was saying they don't have to reveal their strategy to you. He was essentially saying, you know, you don't need to bother. But I've come to think that that's not actually the way that people should think about hedge funds. For one thing, they're mostly out of reach because they're only available to what's called accredited investors. And we'll talk about what that is in a second. But another thing, unless you have, and actually you helped me understand this, unless you have $10, $15, $20 million to invest, they probably actually don't make sense to invest in or to really learn about and take the time to build a portfolio in, right?
That's right.
Is that how you would say that?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. So first, what's an accredited investor?
So an accredited investor has to meet certain standards, and you know them better than I do, for income and wealth to suggest that they are sophisticated investors. And I think more importantly, that they can afford to make more complicated bets that can go very badly.
Right. So you have to have $1 million, $1 million investable dollars. So not the equity in your home. So you can own your home, but then you need $1 million in an investment account, including your IRA or 401k. And then the alternate qualification is as a single person, I believe you have to have $200,000 a year in income, or as a married couple, it's 300. So, you know, you could easily see some couple in Silicon Valley who has $200,000 in income not actually being sophisticated when it comes to investing. There's all kinds of strategies when it comes to hedge funds. So the core message when people are listening to this show, the core message, when you hear the word hedge fund, you can't know what that actually means.
It could mean a lot of different things.
Right.
And what it usually means when you're talking to someone at a cocktail party and they say, I invested in a hedge fund or I'm starting a hedge fund, is they're stock pickers. They go out and they pick a stock, and I don't want to be naming stocks like Apple or Tesla, but this is what people pick. They pick stocks that are potentially sexy and can go up a lot, and they can go down a lot. And we've seen it go both ways.
And inside a hedge fund, they can be long the stock, which means they can own it and profit when it goes up in value, or they can be short the stock, which means they can own it and profit when it goes down in value.
That's right. And that's one of the clear distinctions between what most people should invest in, a mutual fund or an index fund or an ETF, where it's all if the stock or
the stock has to go up.
If the stock goes up, the company does well.
Right.
And that's important because usually stocks go up. And so hedge funds that do a lot of investing in securities that make money when they go down over the long haul generally don't do well.
So in your experience, first of all, what do people mean when they say Wall Street? What is Wall Street besides the street?
Yeah, Wall Street is actually a street. And it's called Wall Street because the large investment banks were all headquartered on or around Wall Street in downtown Manhattan. So when people say Wall Street, what they're usually talking about are the large investment banks like Goldman Sachs.
Okay. But hedge funds are Wall Street, right?
So hedge funds are linked to Wall Street. They're intertwined with Wall Street. Every hedge fund, my hedge fund included, is going to have a Wall Street banker as a partner that provides services. There often are people who came out of Wall Street, out of the investment banks. The investment banks started their own hedge funds. That's been dialed back in the last 10 years, but they are very intertwined. But actually, the equivalent of Wall Street in hedge fund world has been the South Coast of Connecticut, primarily because Connecticut didn't have the same taxes as Manhattan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's starting to change, and more hedge funds have moved into Manhattan, but most hedge funds are actually outside of Manhattan.
Okay, so is everybody who gets to touch a hedge fund like dripping in money?
maybe when they start touching, but not necessarily after they start touching. So it depends. So there are name brand hedge funds that are run billions of dollars. And yes, everyone who's involved there is making a lot of money, investing a lot of money, or losing a lot of money.
So once you get to a certain strata, do you make money whether your investors make money or not?
Oh, yeah. And sometimes billions.
Right. And that's maybe a portion of some of the things that people were really angry about during the financial crisis.
In the financial crisis, it was the banks, the investment banks, that got the brunt of the anger. Hedge funds sort of dodged that, and I think justifiably so. But it's all the same. When you do business with an investment bank, they're generally not working in your best interest. Even when Uber goes public, and Goldman Sachs will be there, Goldman will be working for Uber, but they'll also be working for their long-term clients. Uber's only going to go public once. And their long-term clients are, for example, big hedge funds that pay them large amounts in commissions for trading with them. They make the money in a variety of other ways, but they're actually the most important. And if you're an investor in, I don't mean owning the stock, but if you have money with Goldman Sachs, you're the least important because you're the tiniest little fish in that big pond.
Individual investors,
even the ones with millions of dollars.
Right. And that's really what people mean when they talk about the old boys club, right?
Yes.
Because there's this cream of the crop of people who are the insiders that get access to stock that is a sure thing. Because pre-IPO shares
are a much better bet.
Can be a sure thing.
They're a much better bet.
Right.
I hate to use sure thing, but
that's why I said they can be.
It's a much better bet. And those are not allocated individually. I mean, I don't know if it's relevant, but it was interesting when Google went public, they chose not to go that route. And they had a Dutch auction for their shares where Wall Street didn't get to pick who got them. And anyone could get them. And Silicon Valley, for a moment, said, we're going to take over the world and change how Wall Street is done. But then nobody else followed that particular path.
Interesting.
And it's not surprising because although, you know, Uber is not going to be Goldman's number one priority, they will be high on the list. And there are plenty of smaller fish in that pond.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But getting back to my question of whether hedge fund managers are dripping with money, how many hedge funds fail? Can hedge funds fail?
Hedge funds fail so hedge funds take money from investors and then they invest it. If they make money for their investors, they make lots of money. If they lose money for the investors, they make less money, but they still make money and they don't lose money. And that's the rub is in a hedge fund, you're better taken care of than if you're at Goldman Sachs, but the hedge fund manager is not going to have the losses that you would suffer if the strategy doesn't work. So when we make money, it's because our investors made money. But when our investors if they were to lose money, because they of course won't, but the losses don't get shared in the same way. So the way a hedge fund manager gets
but your job could go away
is that the investors say, forget it, I'm going to go look for something else.
Right. And hedge funds can in fact evaporate.
Hedge funds do evaporate.
Right.
Well, yes.
Become sinkholes.
Let's say that you have $1 billion and you're investing it in a way that's worked in the past and it stops working, you start losing a lot of money and all your investors try and run, then you have to sell everything that you have to pay your investors back, which doesn't do much good for your portfolio, and boom, you're gone.
Was Bernie Madoff a hedge fund?
Bernie Madoff was a Ponzi scheme
masquerading as a hedge fund. Yeah. That's a tough one. Okay. So I've talked a lot about index funds on this show. Mm-hmm. And most of my listeners know, they've heard me say the global return from the stock market is about 9-10%. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll say there's no reason to invest in a hedge fund if you can't get more than 10%, roughly speaking. Do you agree? I can get 10, probably get 9 or 10% in the stock market.
I hate to disagree with you on your own podcast, but I
just, I might edit you out.
That's fine but I agree with you mostly. If I can give you 8% with more consistency, than the stock market, which gives you 9% on average, but with a lot more volatility, you might choose.
Yeah, the stock market has really high volatility.
Right. And so if a hedge fund is truly a hedge fund and it's a lot less volatility, then lower returns could be acceptable. The problem is a lot of hedge funds have low volatility for a while, and then all of a sudden, poof, and that's infinite volatility.
So I'm glad that you said that, because it gets back to what how you originally described hedge funds as being a yard with a hedge around them, and that the hedge being if you have a bet on what, like if you bet on the Celtics in a game and you make a big bet, then you bet against them in another bet, a smaller bet, and that way you don't have so much money on the table. And that's, I think, what most people think of as a hedge. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, you've sort of limited your downside risk. And that's what you're talking about.
That's the intention.
Okay. But there's lots of hedge funds that go for these really big returns.
Right. If you're betting against the Bank of England, you can either make billions or you can lose everything. And the incentives are set up to encourage that. If I make, and most hedge funds aspire to charge 20% of the profits. So if I make $1 billion for my investors, I make $200 million.
Let's use numbers people can understand.
If I make
$100,000.
I make $100,000 for my investors and I get to keep 20% of it, then I make $20,000. But if I lose that $100,000 for my investors and I don't share in the downside.
You don't owe them $20,000.
I don't owe them $20,000. So it incentivizes, even though the hedge funds are designed and intended to be risk reducing, there's an incentive to take a lot of risk. So you get in my view, and I won't claim this to be like truth. I haven't got evidence to document it, but what I see is a bifurcation where you have hedge funds that do hedging, and they are real hedge funds in the way I've described them. And then you have hedge funds.
They're
the low volatility, and, you know, hopefully that same 9 or 10% return, but maybe a little less, but they're a desirable alternative. And then there are the hedge funds that look very interesting. And I can think of examples where they're up 40, 50% for 2 years in a row. Like they look like you're going to double your money every 2 years.
And then people flock in.
People flock in and then they collapse. And it's either because the first 2 years were luck, because the first 2 years were at a size that could actually support that kind of performance. There are lots of reasons. It doesn't matter. The fact is the end game is that the hedge fund shuts down and the investors that flocked in all lose money. And in a dollar terms, it's almost always the case that they lose more than the early investors made because the fund was much smaller then.
So let's talk about costs. And I've talked about the costs of index funds on this show, somewhere between 5 and say 35 or 40 basis points or 0.05 and 0.4% per year cost of an index fund, approximately. And then most financial advisors charge about 1%. You have robo-advisors who charge 0.5%. Those are all annual costs. So what's a hedge fund's cost?
Well, if you roll everything together, it's related to performance. So the costs are higher when the fund does well, which is a desirable thing, as opposed to them always being high. A hedge fund will typically charge or cost between 200 basis points and 900 basis points.
Holy cow. 2 to 9%.
Yes.
And do they get to call you and ask you questions about their comprehensive financial planning, cash flow management, personal finances, and estate planning?
No, but you get a letter every month, like a page.
That's pretty epic. That's amazing. Okay, so high costs and in theory, high returns, high value.
So if you're paying 400 to 900 basis points, then there were high returns in the past, guaranteed.
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 Right. But future high returns are never guaranteed.
And we have examples of them showing up and we have examples of them not showing up.
So it's a crapshoot.
It's actually worse than that. Because what happens is there are hedge fund managers, and I aspire to be one, that deliver consistent performance and value to their investors, and they make a lot of money doing it. And over time, what they tend to do is keep that money they're making in their fund. And over time, more and more of the fund is their own money. And eventually, the entire fund is their own money. So the hedge fund managers that you would want to be with over time, you get less and less access to. And if you're a new investor, you get no access to. And the hedge fund managers where you can put money in are the ones that had great returns and then have had lousy returns, but they're still spinning the story that the lousy is the aberration, the great's going to come back. Now you want to invest.
Right. So you have to really make money in a hedge fund, you have to be somewhere at the intersection of knowing the right people and having a lot of good luck, because you need to find this star quarterback. A quarterback can be a team of people too, but and everyone who listens to this show knows I know nothing about sports. So don't ask me to name any quarterbacks except Joe Montana. But you need to identify a hot hedge fund manager.
Right. The quarterback that's holding the puck.
That's not funny. Skate to where the puck will be. You need to identify the hot quarterback kind of when he's on his way up and then ride it out. And, you know, he's making money for you, but then you're probably going to get kind of edged out over time.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a live action play.
Right. The other way to make money in hedge funds is to be the quarterback.
For sure.
Just kidding.
Right.
We should all play in the NFL.
I know that somebody named Giselle is married to a quarterback. I can't remember his name. So are you part of Wall Street?
Yes, to some extent. We are in California. Our street is not named Wall Street. It's named the Alameda. But we have partners that are on Wall Street, and I have to go to Manhattan probably 5 times a year to talk to the people on Wall Street because they're part of our business.
And let's butcher the good part, right?
Of course.
Do you want to say anything about your hedge fund?
I really shouldn't.
Yeah, okay. That answers that question. And then let's tell people what they really need to know. So I am going to assert that if someone listening to my show walked into a cocktail party and somebody said, oh, I'm a hedge fund manager, or oh, I invest in hedge funds, that they would be intimidated because they wouldn't understand what that meant. And they would assume that that person was superior to them in some way. So let's kind of break it down. First of all, if someone says they're investing in hedge funds, the first thing, if I met someone at a cocktail party who said he was investing in hedge funds, I wouldn't believe them. I would ask more questions. I frankly would think that they were lying. Maybe they're working for a team that maybe gets to invest in hedge funds, or, I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me like most people who are doing that are kind of finance and nerdy and aren't sort of announcing that at parties. But what's the first thing you would think if someone said, I invest in hedge funds?
I don't know what would first pop into my mind.
Well, let's just role play.
Okay.
I'm at a party. Mm-hmm. Hi, I invest in hedge funds.
Why are you telling me this?
Is that what you would say?
What would I actually say? I would say, oh, what kind of hedge funds?
Okay. And I would say global macro.
I would say good luck with that. Look, I would say for your listeners that if someone says, I invest in hedge funds, or I'm starting a hedge fund, or I've got this great, that you should be really leery of that. I mean, it's the same way as someone says, I've got a great penny stock that you know, it's going to go up by 10x in the next year. Why are they telling you?
Right, exactly. The only reason someone says that at a party is to impress or intimidate you.
To impress you, intimidate you, or get your money.
Yeah.
Which I guess the first two are an attempt to get the third. But the point is that the hedge fund managers, we might have done a disservice in saying you want to find the star quarterback in high school, because you don't want to find the star quarterback in high school. You want to find Joe Montana in high school. And so if you
Joe Montana.
Montana.
No, not Montana.
Montana in finance. Joe Montana in high school, and the odds are really against you. And so if you start giving a bunch of money to high school quarterbacks, hoping they're going to get to the pros,
you're going
to
lose some money.
You're going to lose a lot of money. And you might get lucky, but you are basically playing a bad bet.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true with young hedge funds. So a lot of hedge funds get started. There are thousands of hedge funds in the US. They get started with a small amount of money. We got started with a small amount of money. And when they ask you for money, you should say no. And that was really tough for us at the beginning because we had a good strategy and we've been doing it for a long time. But it still makes sense for people to say no, because you're looking for that inflection point where you actually figure out this is Joe Montana. And it takes a while. It takes a lot of research. It takes a lot of digging and a track record and understanding what's being done and whether it's replicable and sustainable. And it's crazy for most people. This gets back to your original point is if you don't have $20 million, why are you going to put all this work into it to invest a small amount?
Right.
It would be crazy. And the same thing is true for the person at the cocktail party. Unless that's, now if we're at a cocktail party in Manhattan, then maybe it actually is true. But it's still unlikely that this is some undiscovered goal that someone's just offering up to you.
Right. And my experience, the guys who really are investing in hedge funds, guys and gals, on a regular basis, and who are building a sophisticated portfolio or actually doing something with it, are, it's very heady work. It's very analytical. And they're not going to announce it over a martini at a cocktail party. So that's why I said I wouldn't believe them.
Well, I mean, I don't talk about the hedge fund at cocktail parties.
No, you don't.
Not unless someone drags it out of me. Because you're right. There is no point. You can't give it justice. You can't, like, if someone's really interested, then I'd be happy to talk to them about it. But this is a very niche business. And I don't mean what I do, which is a niche of a niche. I mean, hedge funds are a very niche business. It has no place with most investors in the mass market. And that's not being elitist. It's just, it's a niche business. And most people are better served by a diversified portfolio of low-cost index funds or maybe ETFs.
Great. And so really, if you're a profit boss and you're listening to this and you want to know what your reaction should be if someone says to you, I invest in hedge funds or I'm a hedge fund guy, is you should probably roll your eyes and walk away.
Great. Next time I say someone I invest in hedge funds, they're going to roll their
eyes
and
walk away.
But
you never say that. In fact, when I met you, you used to say you had a consulting firm.
Well, it was sort of true.
Right.
Look, if I don't know if the best thing to do is roll your eyes and walk away, but certainly unless you have any sort of interest, it's irrelevant to you. It's like saying, someone saying that I grow tulips, you know, that's great for you. You know, I'm glad. I hope you enjoy that.
Enjoy your bulbs.
And yeah, unless you're also a bulb head, you should just let them have their way.
Okay. What's a day like in the life of a hedge fund manager?
Well, a hedge fund manager who lives in California gets up early, stumbles to his trading station to be prepared for market open at 6:30 a.m. And it's mostly trying to figure out what we're going to do next. Because the thing about a hedge fund is you're not following the market. You're not tracking the ups and downs of the broad market. You're looking for something special or some kind of edge. Which means if you find it today, then you win today, but you'll have to find it again tomorrow. So it's an ongoing, I don't know if you call it a challenge or a game, but it's an ongoing process where you're continually trying to make it work again tomorrow.
Let's just break this down.
Okay.
You sit in front of three computer monitors.
Right.
All with ticker tapes and numbers running and little tables going all day.
Right.
From 6 till 1:30.
Right.
And you try to make money with other people's money.
And there's stuff behind that because I've got two very smart, hardworking people who are feeding into those screens, what's on those screens, so that it feeds me the right stuff based on what I want to do.
Right. And there's deep spreadsheets of research and like that.
There's thousands of hours of research, and I've been doing it for 20 years.
Okay.
And I'm really good at it.
I know, you just can't talk about it.
Well, that's right. But my point isn't that I want everyone to know I'm really good at it. My point is that if you are interested, you in playing in that sandbox, you have to be prepared to do the same thing. And I don't mean starting a hedge fund, although it applies there. I mean, if you want to be a stock picker, you are going to go up against a bunch of amateur stock pickers. You're going to go up against a bunch of amateur wannabe professional stock pickers. And you're going to go up against a bunch of professionals, including people who have spent 20 years studying the sector that you're interested in.
Right. Lest you think that some joker at a conference could teach you in a weekend seminar how to trade stocks, right?
Well, he can teach you how to trade them, just not how to make money.
Okay. Anything else you want to say on this anniversary episode of Profit Boss Radio?
I am finally on Profit Boss.
No, you are on. You were on episode 8.
I was on, but then I just got to talk about my money mindset.
Money operating system.
Oh, that's right. All I got to talk about was my money operating system. Now I get to talk about my
and demonstrate your expertise. Okay, good. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Happy.
Profit Boss, thanks for making it to the end of another episode of PBR. I have been doing a lot of thinking about you. I'm thinking about how hard it can be to change old habits. I mean, sometimes I think how nice it would be if things worked like they did for Keanu Reeves in those Matrix movies. If we could just lie back in an industrial punk rock barber chair and have a little cable plugged into the backs of our necks and just instantly become the masters of our financial domains. That would be kind of perfect, right? Except for the part about having the cable plugged into the back of your neck and the whole industrial punk thing. And Keanu Reeves is so annoying when you get right down to it. But I think it's important to form new habits, especially ones as fun as being alerted when new episodes of Profit Boss Radio go live. You want to know a secret? This is one habit that's almost no work at all. All you have to do is head over to iTunes, find the Profit Boss Radio channel, and hit subscribe. That's it. Then each week, you'll automatically find the latest episode ready and waiting on your favorite device. And the best part is that subscribing to Profit Boss Radio is just the beginning of other wonderful habits, like taking control of your money and learning how to build wealth or starring in your own reality show. Well, maybe not that one, unless it's on YouTube and self-produced. But plenty of great stuff is sure to happen when you subscribe. So what are you waiting for?
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.